It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Jason Snell joins Andy and Renee. We're going to talk about iOS 7 Beta 2. It's here, even on the iPad. And Jason's got a first look at OS 10 Mavericks. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 356, recorded June 25th, 2013. Double hung. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MACBREAK6. And by PDF Pen 6, the powerful all-purpose PDF editing tool from Smile. You can add signatures, make changes, correct typos, fill out forms, and more. And now, with version 6, you can export your PDFs to Microsoft Word format. Learn more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com. Use the offer code MacBreak6. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all your Mac... Oh, my hair is a mess. Oh, I guess we'll do the show anyway. Covers all your Mac... It's raining here. All your Macintosh needs. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here. Andy Anacco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the celestial waste of bandwidth wearing his glass.
There you go.
Looked like a pretty cool spot where they gave you the glass.
That was a lot. That was a lot of fun. I did. It was fun being in New York City, but I can imagine myself wondering if I lived like in Chicago or in the Midwest, thinking, so not only do I have to pay $1,500 for these, but I also have to spend $300 to go someplace to pick them up. The mail service does not reach from Mountain View, California, to my house. Is that the problem, Google?
Well, I'm glad you got it. We'll get your thoughts about it in just a second.
Excellent.
But first, let's introduce the rest of our panel. Jason Snell from IDG is here, editorial director for...
Well, Macworld being the most relevant for
Mac
this show.
World.
Also PC World.
We don't like to mention those other ones, but anyway, yeah. All of them. Yeah. All of the above.
Yep.
Always great to see you. Love to see you. Glad on a here. Rainy day in Northern California.
Yeah,
a weirdly rainy day. Yeah.
I think did California, not, we get confused when it rains.
Yeah, because it's not supposed to rain after June. It's not supposed to rain after June 1st. But, and we got a big studio audience. They came out in the rain. And it's still snowing in Montreal. That's why Renee Ritchie's doing the show from indoors. I don't know. What's the weather like in Montreal, Renee?
It's a downpour, Leo. It's been horrendous winds and rain. I've lost power several times. The whole world is topsy-turvy.
It's end times.
I don't know what to do with melted water when it's falling from the sky.
Renee's with iMore.com. And thank you for the plug that you guys gave me on your talk. What was it called?
TalkMobile.
TalkMobile.com.
Yeah, and we have lots more of you coming up in future weeks.
Got a lot of response, so that's an ongoing thing, huh?
Yeah, we're doing it 10 weeks every other week, so it'll be 20 weeks in total, but it's on every second week.
It's not TalkMobile.com, I apologize.
TalkMobile2013.com.
There you go. Some other company has the TalkMobile.
Yeah.
TalkMobile2013.com. Yep. And I presume you've reserved 2014, 15, 16. Done.
We might have done it for a decade. Just in case.
Just in case.
But although next week is social, so Leo's going to share his thoughts on social with us next week.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the question that you aired this week was, is it better? And I think it's a great question, which I hedged, I hate to say. Is it better to have apps or HTML5 on your phone? You know, web apps or app apps? And I hedged it because on the one hand, I think you can do some amazing things with native apps. But in the long run, I think what you really want in the world is the open freedom of the web, even on a mobile device.
And what was funny is we asked, and I won't name the publication they work for, but we asked a couple of developers who work for a major publication, and their response was, we don't want to live in a world where HTML5 is the user experience. So we got a wide range of opinions.
Isn't that an interesting one? Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind talking a little more about that. Because here's the question. Because when the iPhone came out, it didn't have apps. It had web apps. And Steve said very famously, that's all you'd ever need. These are great.
Sweet solution.
Back down about 6 months later. Do you think that was something planned all along? Jason, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I think at the time, I was actually on a podcast and we talked about it with John Gruber and Merlin Mann, and we all said that there was going to be an app store with actual apps in it.
You guys knew.
You know, well, I think it was obvious to everybody that the web app thing was not going to work. And the question is, did Steve Jobs think that was going to be all and everybody else was working in the background on it, or was it always meant to be just a placeholder because, they were still trying to build the OS and didn't have time to give a third-party development system out. They were barely, they're trying to ship the product.
Do you think you, Gruber and Mann, would change your tune today with HTML5 more mature and more capabilities?
I think the last time I was here, I showed that Forecastio, which feels like an app. I don't know. There's some stuff, even when like WebOS, we saw that for some stuff like games especially, you really needed something more, but we're a lot closer than we were.
Certainly for games.
Yeah. At Google I.O., one of the developer tracks was this new thing that Google's doing for their Chromebooks called packaged apps, so that it's technically a web app, but it has windowing, it accesses the hardware, and it's designed to have both online and offline modes. So if you're I'm not sure if anybody would prefer to do all of their work through a browser window, but if they can make the user interface so rich that there's just not much of a difference between a multi-window desktop interface and a web interface, Will many people even notice the difference?
Right.
We asked a ton of developers, and there is exactly what Andy said. There's a native client. There's also WebGL, which is porting OpenGL to the web, which will try to help with gaming. But at the end of the day, the consensus seems to be that for a class of apps, HTML5 will be fine, but you'll always be able to do more with native, because as the power and technology grows to make HTML5 better, it'll also make native apps better. So it just depends on how close to the metal you need to write your app.
Yeah, I guess there's always going to be a place for apps. But then you look at something like Chrome OS, which Google's really, and I have some skepticism about Chrome OS, but that is basically all HTML5 all the time.
Yeah, but I used a Chromebook for a week, the Chromebook Pixel, and Google does a really good job with their web apps. And if every web app was as good as Google's web apps, I think they'd really have something. But the fact is, we're not even close to that. And most of the so-called apps in the Chrome App Store are like web pages with Flash games embedded in them and things like that.
Yeah, Flash is cheating.
Most web apps are awful. And, Google can say that because they have really good ones. Right. But we're just not there yet.
Yeah, but it's an interesting approach. I'm now using the Chromebook Pixel for 3 weeks now. And I'm sort of I had to go into that phase of testing where, gee, this is working out really well. I'm going to now use this as my sole mobile PC when I leave the office, just to see where the breaking point is. And it's very, very sturdy. Relying on web apps for that limited range of things I do when I'm outside the office. When you talk about competition for a real notebook, no, not at all. But when you start to look at it as a solution for, we need to build good computers that cost less than $500. How do we do it? You start to have to let go of the idea of Windows or Mac OS or even iOS and start to say, well, what do we really, really need this thing to do in order to deliver that sort of use case? And as you keep driving that price down, when you get to $300, really the only viable solution is a Chromebook. And the Chromebook will kick at $300, the Chromebook will kick the absolute butt off of any other solution, even up to $400. And I'm including an iPad. Because you have to buy the iPad, you have to buy the keyboard, and then you have to navigate like a multi-handed interface because it doesn't support a mouse or a trackpad. So I think it'll find its niche so long as they keep focusing on what it's good at. I'm not sure a $1,300 notebook is the right platform for Chrome OS though.
Yeah. Well, no, I think even Google knows it.
Yes.
That's nuts.
That's why they gave them away at Google I.O.
It was just to show it could be done, but I don't think
It makes a lot of sense. You're right, Andy. It's a $200 laptop with no maintenance overhead. I mean, especially organizations that buy PC laptops now, let's say, even more than Mac laptops. Yep. And having an auto-updating device like that that's cheap and essentially in some ways disposable and still will do Google Docs and Google Apps and some other
web apps. Let me give you a preview. That's sometimes like the universe hands you trouble in a way of saying, but you can use this in the column that you're writing soon. I had this thing happening where, you know, you wake up, you check your email, the editor says, "Ooh, got your copy last night, looks great, can you give us a couple pictures?" And I realized that, okay, I've got the thing back in my office, I can take it into my studio, have pictures in 15 minutes. If I promise it'll take 5 minutes of editing, if I promise that it'll be there in 40 minutes, no problem. 20 minutes to take the pictures, and then after that, my main MacBook failed. Spinning beach ball all day long. The computer that I had, the other MacBook I have that I only use here in the studio for reference, also failed. It was the Chromebook was the only one that was actually reliable enough that it no spinning beach ball, no weights. And unlike the iPad, like it actually, oh, an SD card. I know about SD cards. Just put an SD card in me, and I will be able to take that photo and send it to somebody. So it's a very, very wide variety of use cases. And sometimes you have to at least acknowledge that, you know, if you do, Apple is right in the sense that the more you limit what a computer can do, the more you increase the likelihood that that thing is going to be able to do the things it's able to do more reliably.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Wi-Fi issues on the MacBook Air. I'm sitting in with the new Air. Out here, it's fine, but if I go where it's somewhat weaker, I do get some drops. Let's see if is that real or imagined. We'll also talk a little bit about iOS 7. The iPad version's out, and Beta 2 for the iPhone is out. So lots to talk about there. But first, a word from Shutterstock. Do you guys ever use... you probably don't need to. You probably have... photographers out in the field all the time, Jason, taking pictures anytime you need images.
We have some of that, and we also use Shutterstock.
I know. Absolutely. Chicago Sun-Times probably using a lot of Shutterstock lately. 25 million stock.
Boom!
25 million stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and videos. I'm willing to bet a few photojournalists are putting their photos up here because Shutterstock is a great place to sell pictures as well as get royalty free. Somebody tweeted me, "Hey, how come I keep getting EPS instead of JPEGs?" Well, it depends what you get. If you get illustrations or vectors, you're going to get an EPS. If you want a photo, you can get a JPEG. You can actually get in a variety of formats. The best thing about Shutterstock is the search. Unbelievable. I mean, first you've got the categories down here, but with the search, you could search for a topic, and then you can qualify it with an emotion or a gender. Let's do happy hippos. Why not? Do you think we'll find any? Golly, there's a lot of happy hippos on Shutterstock. 19 pages of happy hippos, not angry hippos. That's just an example. By the way, hippos may look happy, but don't mess with them. More people die from hippo attacks every year than sharks. Just want you to know. A little public safety message from Twit. The more you know. Back to Shutterstock. Here's the deal. Shutterstock has subscriptions and images on demand, a variety of different packages. I'm going to tell you how you can really save. I love the search that you can even qualify with their Spectrum tool. So you could say, I want to search for green stuff or blue stuff or green angry hippos or blue angry hippos. This selection, the variety, it's amazing. It's also a great inspiration. In fact, you can create a free Shutterstock account and just use it for inspiration. Enter in an idea, a concept, look for some images, save them to your Lightbox. You could share your Lightbox with others or just save it for future reference. And if you decide you want to buy, it's a great deal. If you use our offer code MacBreak6, we'll take 10%. I'm sorry, did I say 10? How about 30% off your first purchase with a new account? The subscription would be a very good deal in that case. 30% off with the offer code MacBreak6. That's good through the month of June because it's the sixth month. Shutterstock.com. Truly a global company. They've got offices all over the world, languages galore. So I know we have a lot of international viewers. This is good worldwide. Shutterstock.com. Offer code MacBreak6. I don't know if it's a story or not. Maybe you guys do. The MacBook Air Wi-Fi issues. Not the first time a new Apple product's had Wi-Fi issues. iPads are notorious for that.
Every time.
Why is it? Is Apple doing something unusual?
Sounds like them.
Anybody? I wouldn't say I'm having Wi-Fi problems at home where I'm using the new AirPort Extreme. It works very, very well all over the house. I don't have any problems. Out here, where we're near the, you know, our access points are out here in the big studio, I've not had any problems, but I have had pretty regular dropouts in my office that I did not have on earlier devices or other companies' computers. So maybe there is something going on. Is it perhaps that lease issue that they had before?
You know, there's hardware and software that could potentially be at work. It's interesting that they're trying to collect some units where people have complained about this to check it out to see.
They actually said we want to. If you have right. a, if you yeah. somebody comes in with a bad unit, capture it.
Because there could be bad hardware. There could be bad software on the Wi-Fi chip, and right. there could be a bad interaction with the operating system. I have an 11-inch MacBook Air from 2 years ago, and a couple months ago, it started kind of randomly dropping Wi-Fi. And, you know, that's the hardware seems to have been fine historically, but I suspect that there's something weird in an OS update that's caused it to behave strangely. And, you know, it's such a complex problem. And a lot of this Wi-Fi stuff, you know, Apple seems to do a lot of testing before they release a product. But whatever they're doing, there are some instances that they just don't test for. And then, you know, this keeps happening where they end up having to find things out in the wild.
Just to be safe, what is what do they mean, capture? Like, if I brought this into the Apple store and I said, I'm having trouble, would they just take it from
me? There's a butterfly net.
A large net. Yeah.
What do they mean?
That's why every time you buy a brand new release product, if there's a problem within the first 2 or 3 weeks, don't put it off. Take it right back to the Apple store.
Right.
Because the Genius Bar essentially has like hunting licenses from Cupertino, where the engineers say, if the new iPhone 5S comes out, any phones that have been dropped, any phones that have problems getting connectivity, any phones that have audio issues, like they essentially say, put a bounty saying we're trying to get six of those problems from you sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And what happens is that it goes into a beautiful like Spock in Star Trek II style casket, sealed up and banded, and goes right back to engineers at Apple.
So they just swap it.
And they will swap you out. Whereas instead of trying to fix it, there's a good chance you'll walk out of there with a brand new fixed thing. And I am talking about if you drop your iPhone and you were dumb and you broke the screen, there is a chance that they've been said we want examples of phones that have been dropped and had their screens cracked. You actually have a chance that you will get a swapped out phone under those circumstances.
Be the first dumb person, please.
So, one. Yeah,
exactly. Well, see, I don't know. My problems are so intermittent that I don't know if it's me. It's just. Maybe it's not as strong an antenna as it used to be, or I don't know. Should I bring it in just because it drops in the office than it never did before? I don't know. I guess I will.
I hate to. You might as well. I mean, when it costs you nothing, and the geniuses, they're so hygienically in their personal hygiene, and they smile, and they're very nice, and some of them have really interesting tattoos that you can talk about. I mean, there's no reason not to.
Piercings, whatnot.
I see you finally got that carp colored in. Excellent.
Yes. I mean, the question would be, is this a hardware issue or a software issue? In the past, it's always been fixable with a firmware update.
Yeah,
the
Anantech review of the new Air.
By the way, great review.
Great review. Yeah. And and he seems to think that it's a software issue. He did a little bit of analysis and seems to think that this is an issue where the lots of geeky networking things. There's a bad software implementation that's making a drop when the signals are weaker. So I hope so. That's the easiest solution because then Apple can just push out a software update and fix it.
Yeah, as they have in the past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In every case I can think of.
My guess is most likely it's that because they're using presumably a stock part for this that works.
It's AC, right? So these are all new chipsets.
But then Apple writes custom drivers for everything.
Exactly.
And so.
Yeah. Yeah, Anand's article, which is something 13 or something pages.
Lots of pages.
As usual from Anand, you just get the most voluminous stuff. Really did a great job. He also pointed out an issue with AC, with the SMB stack, the file sharing stack. Being so slow, so crappy, that you wouldn't notice any benefit from... He said, I was trying to use the AC to copy files, and I had noticed this too. I have the AirPort AC, and the file copy was really, not only not any faster, it felt sluggish. He said, it's a bad software stack on file sharing with the SMB and Apple sharing, and... Yep. That when you set up an FTP server, it was
a lot faster,
533 megabits or whatever. So and he's in England. He's like in his on a traveling, but he has 18 laptops in his backpack, so he's just able to do all of this.
It takes him a long time to go through security.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I would agree 100% with his summation, which is the Air continues to be the kind of the creme de la creme of this. Thin and light. There's nothing better. Great trackpad. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed that Apple isn't, giving us a higher resolution display. And if you want that, you probably will want to wait for the 13. He said the Power Horse is 13-inch MacBook Retina, MacBook Pro with Retina. But if what you want is extraordinary battery life and just a beautiful system, there's nothing wrong with MacBook Air. In fact, there's some real improvements. The SSD on here is PCIe 2, and it's very fast. Yep. I mean, we did a benchmark last week, and I was blown away. Faster even than the PCI Express card that I put in my Mac Pro.
Yeah. I think the 13-inch Air is the sweet spot of Apple's laptop line, too, and that's where they did the price reduction. That's $1,099 now when it used to be $1,199.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that Apple should take that sticker off the Retina MacBook and say that this is the best Mac that Apple's ever made. Because in terms of features that really, really do reach to consumers and availability to consumers, I can't think of any Mac they've ever made that can top this. This is a fantastic notebook.
As he points out, they're using a large... die Haswell that is not a typical part. And a lot of the Acer S7, which I have, the Haswell version of that does not use the same chip. This is a better chip. It's $150 to go to i7. I did because, you know, I'm a geek. I'm thinking, and I did this with your, I'm thinking the basic stock one for, what is it, $1,099
for the 13-inch?
That's the way to go for most people. Very few people want to go fast.
If I was talking to somebody who was sending a kid off to college or something like that, I'd say, you know, personally, I like the 11-inch, but for most people, they want the more screen real estate. $1,099, that's what I'd recommend. I mean, it's a really – and that's so fast. I have a 2-year-old Air, 11-inch Air, and it is the i7 version, but it's 2 years old. I can edit – I have never had a processor-related slowdown. I mean, I can edit stuff in Photoshop, giant files, and I can edit audio, like 10 multiple audio tracks at once in Logic, and it doesn't drop. And, these things are remarkably fast. They're faster than any person would ever want for any normal use.
They did drop the clock speed on the chip compared to last year's MacBook Air.
Right.
But in some synthetic benchmarks, it's slower. But
overall, it's basically a push.
From the point of view of using it, it's absolutely a push. And the faster SSD, the faster I.O. Right. does, I mean, it boots in
And by
seconds.
Dropping the clock speed, that's where you're getting your battery savings.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And are you guys all getting that 12 hours?
I am. But I'm not doing any. Like, if I start revving up, you know, Final Cut Pro and rendering video after video, it goes down substantially. But
well, what a
I'm
surprise!
Doing
any, yeah.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And I guess you know. Also, when people buy a new computer and they use it constantly and they complain about battery life, you have to meter it down to your normal use schedule. But if I'm just sitting at a cafe, and this is what I literally did, I went to a cafe and just sat there and used web apps and stuff. It lasted longer than I could, you know, sit at a cafe, which is a really long time.
And presumably, Mavericks will make an even bigger difference. That's the other side of this.
Right.
The OS will take advantage of some of this.
The OS and some
hardware.
Of the apps will be rewritten to do that AppNap stuff, and there'll be some serious energy savings. So it should be better.
Chad, do you not see my screen? Is that what's going on? You can't see my screen? Oh, okay. Yeah, I would like to show these. This is the battery tests that Anand did. And his results are as one would expect, which is if you use it lightly, he's getting about 11 hours compared to 7.5 hours. It's really all, 12 hours is the wrong thing to say. It's really relative to your usage on last year's MacBook Air. You're going to get about 50% improvement. Because that's really, because it's how you use it that has everything.
Right. Any synthetic battery test, you know, people will make a guess. This much web browsing, this much file downloading.
Right.
But it's never going to match exactly how you use it. But you can look at the difference.
The difference is the key.
Right. And here we're seeing hours of improvement over last year's model.
So this is 9 hours on a medium workload compared to 5 1/3 hours on last year's MacBook Air. And you know, frankly, I'm probably the guy who's using heavy workload. He says the key is, you know, if you've got 12 tabs open, many of those tabs are still working in the background. It's idle time that's key on all of this. Don't have Flash running on a blank, you know, on a tab on a browser you're not looking at. Close the tabs or things like that.
I mean, it also depends. It's very dependent. And I don't know if this is true with this MacBook because I haven't tried this yet. But in previous MacBooks, especially the Pros, a lot of developers would use Core Animation just to make good-looking effects or to render text. And that would turn on
terrible.
The discrete GPU.
Yeah.
Like I know if I turn off Chrome, my battery life goes right back up because Google's doing a lot of the fancy GPU stuff. So it really depends on the apps you're using as well.
I think he does say, though, and I'm doing this from memory. I read this a couple of days ago, that the GPU is on a lot in this MacBook Air. Anyway, that Apple isn't aggressive about turning it off. And I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and look at it. But the bottom line on battery life, the title of this page is absolutely insane battery life. But the bottom line is 65% over what you were getting last year. So if you had a MacBook 2012, expect, and you were getting whatever you were getting, 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, expect 65% better. That's good because even Intel only claims half improvement, 50% improvement on the Haswell. So obviously Apple's doing some, the battery's a little bigger. They're doing some secret sauce in there.
Clearly Apple has on the iPad and the iPhone, Apple has still, for the last few years, had this push of we're going to make them thinner and lighter, and the battery life has basically stayed the same.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And on the laptops, clearly with this generation, they decided that was where they were going to put their focus, is making the battery life more. That everything right. else is basically the same, but the battery life is much better, which I think was a good call because laptops should live longer off of one charge than Apple's laptops have the last few years.
It's a good feature, full stop, but also you have to think about what could they add to the MacBook Air this year that would be really, really apparent to users. They're not getting Retina. They're not getting right. a case design. They're not getting new ports. I would love to have heard some sort of discussion inside Apple where they're saying, as is right now, we're giving exactly the same. We're promising. The slide in the next keynote says, and despite this incredible boost in performance, you get exactly the same battery life. And then someone in the back raises their hands and says, what if we made that slide into and the battery is now lasting 65% longer? So yeah, let's change that slide and let's do some engineering to make sure that slide is true.
Yeah,
does make this into a buy it now sort of laptop as opposed to, oh, that's nice. Maybe in the year when I need another laptop, I'll buy an Air.
On the other hand, if you're not using the battery a lot, you're not living in coffee shops or on airplanes. I'm plugged in most of the time, so it's not an issue for me. And it might be that you would want to wait for the Retina, 13-inch Retina, if portability and battery life aren't key. I have to say, the screen resolution is feeling a little antiquated, with most of the new Windows laptops having 1080p screens. This 1440 by 900 feels a little bit antiquated. It is also not IPS. I mean, it's kind of an older technology.
Yeah, I use the 11-inch, and I don't have a problem, but I use the 11-inch, so I'm a crazy person.
You're crazy. I couldn't take it.
But Retina, it's inevitable. The question is, will it be next year or not? I think the fact that they're adding battery and battery life and all of that in this model, I mean, what's one thing you need a lot of battery for is to do the video card, to do the Retina display. So I think they're working up to it, but... that's a matter of, do you want to wait a year or two for another laptop?
Right. And that's interesting, too. Have they sort of dug themselves into a little bit of a hole here? Because it's okay for them to not mention the process, the processor speed, but say, hey, look how much better the battery life is. Does that mean that a year from now when they do a Retina MacBook Air, and maybe have they put themselves in this position where they can't say that, oh, and you're taking about a 3 hour battery hit for the Retina display, but hey, look, Retina display. Or now do they have the challenge where whatever we do, we have to maintain the same level of battery, or at least maybe knock off an hour at most of it, but still be able to say you will get all day battery on this, even though you have a Retina display.
Apple's done that before, I recall, where they've had that. I mean, even with the iPad 3, it's like, it's Retina. Yeah, it's a little thicker and heavier, but it's Retina. Isn't that awesome? Yeah. And I think the question is what the difference is. If it's really, really worse battery life, like cut in half, it's a harder story to tell. But if it's down a couple of hours, they'll finesse it.
Yeah. When it's running on ARM and it's using a modern UI, no one's going to pay attention to the battery life.
There's also two panels, right? There, the if Anand got the nice Samsung panel. I think is it LG is the other. It's hit or miss. It's a random, depending on which panel you're going to get. Apparently, some of them are a little bit better. He liked the Samsung a little bit better. Anyway, it's fine. It's just when you have everything else is Retina. Yeah, and you go to this, I just feel like...
they've got their differentiator. This. Everything non-Retina is light and thin and small, like the iPad mini or the MacBook Air, and everything that is Retina is bigger and more powerful and,
Except the iMac. It's your choice, yeah.
Maybe I'm a dissenter. I mean, I certainly do appreciate the difference between a Retina screen, but given that the distance that I'm usually viewing a laptop screen at, it's not quite so in my face. I appreciate the difference, but I don't have that same, ooh, what's this going on now? I refuse to even touch it.
Well, we work in text a lot, too, and although the text is crisp and nice and I can see it, It doesn't make as big a difference as looking at photos. Looking at photos on the Retina MacBook blows me away. Looking at text, it's nice.
Oh, no, it makes a difference to me. Yeah. I could do an A/B test on. I could look at this.
Oh, I could tell the difference.
Immediately
but it
go, God, it's jaggy.
I think it's also a much bigger deal when you're on the web than anything else, because the web is you got all kinds of text and all kinds of content at all kinds of scales. This is the one area in which, like this device with its like non-retina display and like the Nexus 7, or even the Kindle Fire, which is higher resolution, this device does look like Chrome does look terrible when you're doing the web. I have to do a lot more zooming for that. So yeah, maybe if there were more web content, especially on the 11 inch, which again, Jason, you're a lovable freak, like Zonder from Doonesbury, but it's like, oh man,
bring on the 8 inch. Just keep making it smaller. I'll go there. Four inch.
How about the Apple Watch?
Yeah, exactly.
Give me 14 pixels, but it's beautiful. It's
high res.
Nerve in the chat room actually makes a fantastic point, which is next year. All these Macs will be running Mavericks, which will presumably have better battery life, which will allow Apple to claim a larger hour number than they can claim right now.
I'm really curious. Now, you're running Mavericks on your 13-inch MacBook Pro, right?
This is a Pro Retina. Yeah, this is my review unit.
It's an Apple unit.
It's from Apple, yeah.
So because it's an Apple unit, you can talk about it?
I can talk about it a little bit, yeah. I mean, I'm writing stories about it. There'll be a story up tomorrow.
Okay.
What do you want to know?
Well, I'm looking at it. It looks pretty much the same. I see the Mavericks wallpaper.
Yeah, it's fancy.
What's different?
So the story that I'm doing for tomorrow.
First of all, iOS 7 is very, very beta. Even beta 2 is still really rocky.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, I wouldn't know because I haven't played with it. But
I've read articles to that effect online,
yes. Please, you guys. So Mavericks, how much is it in better shape? How close are we?
I think I've been using it for the last week, and it's
a production machine.
And it's pretty solid. There are quirks, but it's beta.
You couldn't say that about iOS 7. I mean, it really is.
My setup at work is a two monitor. I have an external, I have a Thunderbolt display, and then I've got a laptop. And that's my favorite feature so far of Mavericks is the multiple monitor support, where now you can do mission control. You can put in Mountain Lion, if you put an app in full screen, the other display becomes linen.
So nice. Such a nice texture.
It just sits there and does nothing. And in this, the two screens are completely independent. You can full screen on one. You can have the desktop on another. You can swipe. If you move your mouse onto one screen and swipe with the trackpad, it'll move through spaces. Move it to the other screen, swipe. It'll move through the spaces there. They're completely independent of one another. It's really nice. And then you can AirPlay it to a TV using Apple TV and use it as an external display.
How important is that? Are there a lot of people with multiple displays?
You know, I'm surprised that Apple's doing this feature because I always figured Apple just would say there aren't enough people doing it.
Right.
I know a lot of people who do it, but they're more
pros do it
users.
You know, our finance department does it. They'll have two Excel spreadsheets open.
I think with all the laptops out there, if three quarters of the systems Apple sells, somewhere between two thirds and three quarters, are laptops, then you know some percentage of those people do want a big display when they're at work. And at that point, you've got two displays. You might as well use them if you can really make use of them. And Apple doesn't do anything without a lot of research. So I imagine that they did the research and said, hey, maybe we could prioritize these multiple monitor features. So,
also, it was just annoying. I mean, even if it's only 2% of users, but that's just annoying.
Everyone in Cupertino was using it that
way. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so now this is great. Yeah. You can just take your calendar app and put it over on your small laptop screen and hit it full screen
really curious.
And let it sit there.
You got to – Macworld should do a poll or something because – I'm really curious if people are moving to multiple screens. I have a feeling maybe more than we think. It may be less of an unusual. How about in our audience? How many? One? And everybody in our staff, of course.
See, that's the difference.
If the boss buys it, as many screens as you can get on there.
But if the Mac is becoming more of a truck, right, it's more professional, then the power user percentage might increase over time. So it's not bad to add some power user features.
And everybody in our chat room. I mean, our chat room, of course, people in our chat room are a different breed. Many of them probably have chat running in a second screen.
Right.
And maybe us as well. But it seems like many of our chat room is running multiple.
How's this for a twist, though? I find that I was about to say that I almost never use a second screen, but I had to correct myself because I was talking. You're talking about a second display plugged into a monitor port on your laptop or on your desktop. And in truth, I use a second display almost all the time. When I have my notebook out, I almost always have my iPad on an easel right next to it for a second, a totally separate app with a totally separate operating system. Even when I write on my iPad, I will almost always have a second iPad or the iPad mini, again, on an easel next to it. Because to me, that just seems like such a natural and easy way of right multitasking. So I don't know. That's more of an interesting story than a functional data point. But the fact of the matter is that the fact that multiple screens used to be the bee's knees. I was about to use a rude word that's in the vernacular, but I will say it used to be the bee's knees. Now maybe that's just not the way that people are interacting with real productivity multi-screen workflows.
I'm willing to bet. Now, we only had one person who uses two monitors in our audience, but I'm wondering how many of you, when you're watching TV, have another screen open at the same time. All of you, right? That's the condition of the modern world. Yeah. And you can do that. You know, you can AirPlay to a big screen TV now.
Yeah, you can.
If you have an Apple TV, right? You have to have an Apple TV.
Yeah, Apple TV. And then with Mavericks, instead of it just being mirroring, it will be a second monitor if you want it to be. And
so I can have my Game of Thrones wiki on my laptop while I'm watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and you can full screen it up on the TV. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, or anything you want to put up there, put maps up there, put a calendar
so
up there.
In that sense, again, that's probably a small number of people who have an Apple TV and a Macintosh and watch TV on their big screen with their Apple TV.
Sure.
But in that sense, I think we are getting used to the idea of, very much used to the idea of having multiple screens at the same time.
Yeah, it's really good in businesses and conference room environments. If you, I think they're going to sell more Apple TVs than they already have into conference rooms because makes it that much more flexible when you're in a presentation or sharing environment.
Right.
I did want to ask a question, just a poll of the panel. How many people think that part of the reason why Apple decided to improve multi-screen performance is that they simply were offended by the fact they were shipping a product that had a feature that was this busted, that just didn't work as well as anybody would expect it to? I'm serious. I mean,
it's got to be embarrassing.
I mean, could that have been the legendary Apple as opposed to the real Apple? We could say, no, we will not ship this if it doesn't support multi-displays very, very well. I just imagine it being just annoying, just like that broken step on your front porch
you can
walk over it only enough times before you say that, I know that it's intact, I know that it's functional, but damn it, I feel like an idiot for having this broken step.
They ran out of linen, and they couldn't just leave a white screen, so they had to put something on.
They had plenty of leather left over that they were pulling off the rest of the interface.
You think it could be as part of the death of skeuomorphic design? We have to get rid of that linen. It's driving me crazy.
Linen.
The whole screen of linen.
What would you have?
Thomas Wolfe
test pattern.
Incredibly upset.
An open GL picture of your face blurred in the background.
Screensaver.
With parallax view.
Yeah.
A list of
anything else in Mavericks that leaps to the eye that perhaps we didn't know about that you've seen as you've played with it over the last week, Jason?
I still got to spend some more time with it. I mean, it feels faster. Mail, I actually use Apple Mail. I stopped for a while and I went back to it with Mountain Lion, and it's much faster, even in the beta.
Ooh.
I don't know what they did, but it's much faster. And then, you know, there's obviously a lot of concern put toward energy use here, and I haven't. I don't have enough data to say it's definitely using less battery than before, but you know, under the battery dropdown, it tells you what apps are consuming power, which is a really kind of nerdy thing that I think Apple would never have talked about before, but it's in there. And you can actually from there open the Activity Monitor app, which I've always used and has always been one of my favorites. But
you know what's funny is that all Android phones do that. And you get used to it. iPhone has never done that, yes. And I wish it would. Yes. And the fact that doing it on the desktop, maybe they'll put it in iOS.
And they added this feature.
It's
and
a great
an activity
feature.
Monitor, in addition to your CPU usage and your network usage and your memory usage,
it has
a power usage meter that will show you which apps are using power, even historically, like how much power over the last half hour or hour. Wow. These different apps. So if you're really having trouble, you know what apps are the culprits.
Is it just another tab on the
Activity? It's just another tab in Activity Monitor.
Such a nice
thing. So they're whether this actually amounts to much, I can't say yet, but definitely it seems like that was a big area of interest for Apple and Mavericks was to try and add more PowerSense, which ideally would make that MacBook Air that is has such a big battery already work even better if it really works.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And you got actionable notifications, which I also want on iOS.
I have a bunch of friends who hate iMessage for good reasons, because it's really messages is really kind of buggy. And the nice thing about this is they never need to open messages. Whenever they get an iMessage, it comes in as a bubble notification, and you can click reply and type something, and you never actually get any messages.
So jealous.
Yeah, that's nice.
So we will I be able to go into this sidebar, the notification sidebar, and action there, or do I have to see a pop-up bubble to do that?
I don't know. You can definitely do it in a pop-up here. Bubble.
Click to tweet or click to post.
Yes, you can. I can exclusively report. Yeah, you can just send an iMessage from within.
Look at that! I love it.
So there's, right. You know, I got to say, Apple sometimes has a reputation of being this mysterious monolithic company that doesn't really listen to what users complain about and just goes their own way. But, you know, every one of these OS X releases that they've been doing the last few years has knocked off an awful lot of complaints off of the complaint list. And I like that. That means they are either they're listening or they are Mac users just like us and they hate the same things that we do and they want to fix them. But either way, it's good for Mac users both. To get those updates.
But the irony is they do listen on the desktop a lot more than they listen on the phone.
That may
be. We don't have actionable notifications on the phone yet either.
That may be.
Yeah.
Or the list is just longer, Leo. There's so many more things they have to get to.
That's true.
And OS X is just mature enough that they can start knocking off those little things where iOS is still redo interface, checkbox, actionable notifications, next time.
We'll save iOS for the next segment. But first, let's talk a little bit about Smile software. By the way, I should mention our good friend G. McDonald, who's a partner at Smile. Her app Camp for Girls opened yesterday. I think it's such a great idea. They're bringing in great to idea. Encourage girls to get involved in computer science. She's got an app Camp for Girls. I didn't pay for an ad for that, but I'm going to mention it anyway.
I donated.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it a Kickstarter?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Or an Indiegogo.
Indiegogo, something like that.
Yeah, it was a crowdfunding thing.
Yeah. So
my daughter's
really
11.
Good.
I would love for her to do something like that next summer. That'd be great.
So cool. Well, it just kicked off. Find out more at appcamp4girls.com. And while you're at it, you might want to support Smile Software because they do such great stuff, including the brand new PDF Pen 6, all-purpose PDF editing tool from Smile Software. If you work with PDFs, you might be tempted to say, well, I've got Preview. I don't need to, you know, do anything more. I use PDFs. My son's going to college in the fall. Lots of forms to fill out. Having PDF Pen is so fabulous because I can download the PDF. I don't have to print it, fill it out, scan it, and fax it. I can edit it right in the PDF with PDF Pen. Makes it so easy to add things like signatures, to fill out forms, sign contracts. I don't have to print. I don't have to fax. I can just do it right on the original. The quality's better. And with PDF Pen for the iPad and PDF Pen for the iPhone, you can go back and forth seamlessly, which is awfully nice, too. If you're a MacBreak listener, we've got a special deal for you at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. A free demo for you. These are on the App Store, but you know, you have to do a demo on a website, right? So if you want to do the free trial, try it right there. smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. Export to Word, one of the new features. That's nice. You can export it out to a Word. People still send me Word documents to fill out. I don't understand that. That's just nuts. That's just crazy talk.
There are parts of the world where Word is still a thing.
Not my world. But thank goodness I have PDF Pen, and I'm able to export right out to the Microsoft Word and make them happy. New tools, new interface, new features. Add text, images, and signatures. You keep them all in your library for easy access, make changes, fix typos, resize, and delete images right in a PDF. You got to like that. There's the App Store version. Fill out forms. That's the thing I use all the time. You can even OCR scanned documents. But look at that. Back when I had to do taxes, that's how I did it. PDF Pen version 6 is out. Try it for free. A free demo awaits you at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. And thank you, Gene, and good luck with App Camp for Girls. I gave them an extra little plug in there just for that. It was Indiegogo. Yeah, they raised $50,000 in 3 days. They got to their stretch goal. It's in Portland this year, and I hope that they can do more, even more next year. That's really cool. All right, iOS 7, can't show it to you, won't show it to you, but there are people who have copies they're willing to show you, including, who was this, 9to5Mac? Can I show their Would you? Would anybody be offended?
I wouldn't be offended if you showed 9 to 5 Mac. No.
We don't judge, Leo.
Yes, you do. You're judging me. So Beta 2 came out for the iPhone, and when Beta 2 came out, so did iPad versions. They've got the first iPad look. It doesn't look – it looks like it's the same OS on an iPad, right?
I don't know.
It's Russian, apparently. I don't know what that is.
My first reaction is that it's possible that the iPhone 5 is not the device this was designed to run on. Not that it doesn't run perfectly fine on the iPhone 4 and iPhone 5, but that perhaps they are already thinking ahead to the best target for this is going to be the iPad Mini.
It's got the parallax. Look at that.
And next year there's going to be we all have to assume there's going to be a larger screen iPhone. So that when I was looking at these videos and these screenshots myself, I was thinking, God, it looks a lot prettier on a larger screen than it does on the current scale iPhones. And maybe that's part of their thinking.
That's an interesting thought. That didn't come to me. Yeah, that's interesting.
A lot of people have been speculating and talking about that this is an operating system designed, you know, maybe for current hardware, but also for hardware that's in the pipeline, because Apple said, you know, this is a platform that's going to take them. One does not simply make an OpenGL physics engine and particle engine for current products. This is a long-standing commitment to human interface. And I agree with Andy. It looks very well designed for an iPad.
Big change to the multitasking on the iPad. They're doing that same card thing that they're doing on the iPhone. And I have to say, on the iPad, it does make a lot more sense.
With all those detailed previews.
You can see the preview.
They don't just hint at what's there. It says, here's exactly the... Even if you just want to use that as a dashboard just to give a status look at everything that's going on.
Well, and the iPad really needed it, because the icons, just showing the icon. And it wasn't even clear that something was running or not. It was just an icon.
Well, keep in mind, I mean, the iPad came out after the iPhone, and the iPhone OS was originally what it was. And when they added the iPad, it's a lot of the fundamental things about the iOS interface were kind of set, and they made it work.
Right.
But, you know, I think this is this is the first chance for them to really redesign the iOS interface with the iPad in mind. And so it's encouraging when you see something like this.
I mean, it is encouraging, but let's also acknowledge that if Apple did not believe that this would work, that this had worked, they would have made a tweak to it for the iPad.
Yeah, sure.
We wouldn't have had to wait this long. So I do think that Apple kind of sat in their hands a little bit too long, giving a application switcher and some other things that really could have been improved before now.
Oh, yeah, it certainly could have. I think that this was finally we're seeing them be able to do that. They could have tried to do a rethink earlier, and who knows, Scott Forstall maybe. But now they are, and I think that's good, because the iPad, I mean, that was the knock on the iPad, and it was silly to say it was just a big iPhone. But, you know, I always felt with the home screen especially that was fair criticism of the home screen. The apps, not so much, but the home screen, you know, it was, what do we do with all that space? I don't know, so...
There's a famous story from Greg Joswiak when they said, why is there no cut and paste on the iPhone still? And he said, well, it's on the list. There's just other things above it. And it finally got to the list for iOS 3, I think it was. And this, I mean, they had other ideas for multitasking before. There were prototype iPhones found with Exposé on them that Apple ditched and said, no, we're going to do the fast app switcher instead. So they've always been playing and experimenting with it. And I think when they move to the object-oriented interface, where everything is like a plane that they can actually manipulate and has direct manipulation as gesture actions, it makes a lot of sense to start going towards these metaphors. They're not... All the animation, my understanding is that it's no longer keyframe animated. It's real physics, and it'll bounce and collide and move around. And that lets you start rethinking all these basic ideas about interface.
There's a lot of white. You know, if this iOS 7 was really designed for the iPad, do you think Apple's starting to think that the iPad is its most important product, more so than the iPhone, let's say?
I wouldn't say that. I would say it's maybe designed for larger screen devices as well as smaller screen devices in a way that the iOS was designed for the one size. Right. So now you've got an iPad and an iPad mini, and maybe you'll have a larger iPhone coming down the pipe. And now it's got room to take advantage of those bigger spaces and stretch out in maybe a way that the original iOS wasn't.
Okay.
And although there's no bigger fan of the big-sized iPad than I am, I think that Apple is going to start looking at the popularity of the iPad mini and thinking that that is now going to be the default iPad and that's what we have to design. Yes. They will never design iOS around a single device, but
isn't that funny?
The central experience has to be, this has to look absolutely fan-frickin-tastic on the iPad mini. And if it looks a little bit wrong on the full-sized iPad, that's okay. Just like right now, it was okay that the iOS looks a little bit wrong on the mini. But that's not gonna be true next year.
Ironic that, because Steve said we'll never do a 7-inch. 7-inch is wrong, and it turns out maybe that's the sweet spot for everything. Yeah. Apple.
They will never do video on an iPod.
Yeah.
They'll never make a phone.
If you imagine, I mean, Andy's exactly right that you may end up with a scenario where everything's a little too cramped on the iPhone, but there's the bigger iPhone where it feels okay, and then the iPad mini it feels okay, and then everything's a little too spaced out on the big iPad. And that may be where we end up, that Apple is sort of shooting for that middle ground and wants everything to scale a lot more than iOS was built to do originally.
I wish that it would be what I'm interested in finding out is what was the thing that kind of broke people for the iPad mini? Because you can make the argument that it was really the price, because it's you can sort of justify $320 as, well, this is a consumer item. Whereas at the $500 price point, you're talking about a very specific kind of, a more specific kind of consumer. Or was it the simple fact that, I mean, this is something that you can really manage. You can toss it in bags. You can even toss it into back pockets for a sufficiently large pocket. I think it's one of those two. It was not something that anybody was going to figure out until the original iPad was released. But I think that all the data is saying that what people want is a smaller screen.
I switched to the iPad mini, and I have never gone back to the full size iPad.
Except it needs to be Retina.
Reading comics makes me sad on it because it's too small.
I still use the full size for comics. It's the only thing I use it for is comics and the occasional TV show. But I think to Andy's earlier point too, they showed off a lot of really, like they basically rebuilt the whole type engine, and they were showing that off on stage, the different things that they can do with typography on the iPad. And that makes sense when you start having multiple screen sizes to have type that's not just scaled, but it's actually specifically defined
for each of those sizes.
And, you know, my eyes are not getting any better. So I really appreciate the stuff that they're doing, because on iOS 6 on the iPhone 5, it was getting really teeny tiny.
Maybe that's why I want Retina so bad, but more than you guys, because I'm old.
That's possible.
Yeah.
You want a version of iWork that ships on cassette tapes.
Yeah. In a baggie. When will we see a Retina? We'll see a Retina Mini this year. Yeah.
I don't know. I hope so.
No.
It's tough to get that, you know, see what happened to the iPad when they put Retina in it. It got so much thicker
and slower.
It got heavier. And it slowed down a little because they had to have all that video processing in it because there's so many dots, so many pixels. So
the iPad 3 is the worst iPad in a lot. I mean, any game developer will tell you it's the absolute worst iPad they've ever built.
Yeah. And you're going to need a lot of performance. You're going to have that particle engine and the physics engine and all that stuff too, right? I mean, is that true, Renee, that...
It's GPU. So my understanding is that they're making the thinner iPad Maxi, and they're making the Retina iPad Mini, but it's a gamble with battery life. And is Apple's not going to ship a Retina iPad Mini that gets 5 hours battery life. So as soon as they can hit 10 hours battery life and they have a launch window like the fall or the spring, that product will go into cycle. But whether that, if they'd done it earlier, we would have had it earlier. If they can do it for fall, maybe we'll get it in the fall.
Yeah. And there's no sign that the iPad Mini is not selling well, right? It's selling really well. They may be able to go through the holidays this year with a smaller update and bring Retina on for more price, because it's going to cost more and it might have worse battery life. Maybe they wait until the spring for that.
Yeah, good point.
We got a bunch of graphics guys together for an Iterate podcast, and one of them was Lauren Brichter, who does Letterpress, and he said as a graphics engineer, looking at iOS 7 makes him cry, because basically that is just running off the GPU. They got blur shaders all the time, and it's incredibly expensive. But I think once that becomes the new table stakes and then the future chips comes out, that's just something the operating system does, and the whole next generation of apps gets built on that platform, and then it gets really exciting.
I would guess none of Lauren's apps use GPUs. They're very clean and
rewrote
for that.
He rewrote UIKit in OpenGL to make Letterpress.
Really?
He is not normal. No.
And he did that because he wasn't happy with the way it was.
He wanted it the way he wanted. I mean, his original job was at Apple building the GL stack for the first iPhone.
So he could make it better. Yeah.
Yeah. And for Tweety, he was rendering text to a frame buffer to make it move really, really fast. So for Letterpress, it is a complete OpenGL interface.
Wow.
You see that a lot. You see, there's a lot of iOS apps where you find out, wow, this is the one of the best camera apps ever. How did you do that? And the developer says, well, I basically wrote my own interface kit. And wow, you're right. Word processor works great. How do you do that? Well, I wrote my own text kit, or I wrote my own cloud.
That's
kit.
Not a good thing.
Well,
you don't have to now.
It's adequate for most. It's adequate for most people, and for if you have a vision of an app that requires something else, you're free to be more clever. But like Renee said, now a lot of that stuff has really been addressed. I feel sorry for these people who are creating next generation word processors, where they've sort of given up on the text engine that's built in, and now they've got something coming up that's this is better. And now when Jason Snell's daughter comes out of camp, she can actually write a better word processor than the one that I've been working on for the past 11 months.
Yep. It seemed to me, though, that the early days of the Mac, what was one of the selling points of the Mac was how good the ROM routines were, how good the API was.
I think the APIs are good, but when you're in an app universe with 500,000 apps,
you got to be the best.
If you want to stand out from the crowd and do something that not everybody else is doing, this is where you go. And it's amazing that they actually can go there, and so they do. But you see that a lot, that the ones, it's not all of them, it's the 10 or 20 that we talk about. Right. They're like, wow, they do something I've never
seen
before.
There's something magic going on.
That's it's paths. They're not using the stock stuff. They're using custom, a lot of custom.
So I poo-pooed this article in Polygon by Tracy Leanne, the Apple obstacle for serious games. Making a serious game for iOS devices is not as easy as you'd think. You'd agree with that, it sounds like. I mean,
although I'd say the biggest problem to making a serious, quote-unquote serious game, and let's be clear, serious games don't sell as well as not serious games do, but I think the touch interface, Apple is not going to put hardware buttons on an iOS device.
And they shouldn't,
but serious games really, at this point, as they've been conceived, all require like controllers or something that they're just not going to provide.
I think that's lazy.
But we're seeing support for that now.
Yeah.
If you're porting a game that was on a PC or a console to the iPad, maybe that's lazy. Maybe you should write something that is designed for the touch interface. There are games, you know, Angry Birds, Plants vs. Zombies, that use the touch interface so well. Fruit Ninja.
If you see a D button on the screen, they blow it.
I hate that.
Yeah.
When I look at that, I go, I'm not going to buy that game. I sure would love to play Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty on the iPad, maybe. Right. But those games require very complex controls, and it's just not suited to touch. Go ahead.
So I was going to say, one of the things that was the best, one of the best reactions I saw from WWDC was from a lot of developers who were so happy that they could go home now and throw away a bunch of code that they had to custom write. Because, you know, before, and they'll tell you this, it took forever to get 4 custom physics movements going on their app. And now they can pretty much do anything that they dream. It took forever to get, you know, they just couldn't use a game controller. Now with iOS 7, you'll be able to pick up a Bluetooth game controller and use that. And they're going to have so many opportunities. When you look at what Apple's done, and it's not fair because Apple has special tools to make all this stuff, but developers will figure that out. And when you look at all the kinds of interactions and objects that iOS 7 is moving around, the next generation of apps and games a year from now, they're getting all that stuff for free. They can now spend their cycles on making stuff fantastic, not just making it move anymore.
And actually, Tracy's saying that the other issue is simply getting through the App Store. You know, that you can't be guaranteed you could spend years writing a game and then say they can get rejected, which would be pretty bad.
Although lots of developers do talk to Apple in advance and say, okay, we want to do this. Is this going to be a problem? That actually does happen. And so it's not quite as bad as that, but it's true. If they just decide they don't want your app in the store, they'll reject it. But we don't hear about that a lot. It doesn't happen very often. Plus,
and the ones they rejected were kind of obvious.
Okay, here's one. Endgame Syria. It's a card game. Players explore the politics and military side of the conflict in Syria by deciding which political path to choose, which military units to deploy. Apple rejected it, saying the app contained content or features that include people from a specific race, culture, government, corporation, or other real entity as enemies in the context of the game, which is not in compliance. So you can't have an enemy that's a real person.
It's like Disneyland, Leo.
Now, probably should have known that, right?
Sure.
It's hard to make a game called Endgame Syria that doesn't do that. So I think they probably had to walk away, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are only two bad things about this. I agree with Jason that it was scary and a lot very damaging. I think when the App Store first opened, when there weren't a whole lot of protocols inside of Apple for dealing with bad results, and also developers had not really figured out exactly how the system works. Now, it's rare that I hear about a developer who just got shut down by Apple and either A, had no idea that it was coming, or B, after it came, didn't get any help on how to fix, or excuse me, quote, fix, unquote, the app. The only thing that's going to be hard to absolutely eliminate is apps. There are people who believe that games are a true art form and a true means of social expression.
They are.
So the only thing that concerns me is that means that if you do want to do something that addresses a controversial topic, you will not want to target iOS because you don't know if you will be able to get this game into the App Store. And okay, fine, release it on the web, but that's really the only downside that I see to Apple's process.
So what Endgame Syria did is they released it on Android and then they changed it to Endgame Eurasia for iOS, and they replaced the Hezbollah with a militant group. Palestinians became refugees. Apple also turned down this game, Sweatshop HD, because Apple was uncomfortable with the recreation of a sweatshop. Wonder why?
You know, you pull the tail of the tiger and you get bit.
and then you complain when you get bit.
No.
So Tracy Lien's article on Polygon.com, probably worth reading. It's mostly about rejection. Not about the issue of how hard it is to write these games.
Any more emo about rejection? House.
Yeah, it's too bad because I do feel that games are an art form.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there are many platforms, but I don't see why people who use iOS should somehow be discriminated against from getting the true creative games because Apple says, "Well, we didn't think you should do it."
On the other hand, it does make it a bit, it makes the App Store and the Game Store as a whole a better product for consumers.
I'm not sure that's true, Andy. That's not the case. It's better in what way? It's bowdlerized. It's better because it's unoffensive.
I mean, for general consumers, that's a very, very small percentage of the market. People who like offensive content and content that people would not want to see, or people that would not want to see a game. I don't want to bring the conversation down by citing examples of stuff that let's just say that you were a celebrity TV chef and had a game that expressed a thought that you had.
Ouch.
I think
homophobia that, probably. I guess I can understand why you'd want to ban that. Although,
given that, I mean, I'm just saying that given that Apple, my position is usually that Apple is the company that has to take the heat for not being a completely open company, accepting just about anything. So on that basis, if they're going to allow themselves to take that heat of, no, we are not a store where we will allow expression of any thought, idea, or concept. We will police and we will curate to create standards that we think that our community would like. That's not a bad thing for most people. It's a bad thing for some people. And for those people, there is Android and there is the web.
It's the Walmart approach.
Ah! Now take that back.
Well, it is a gated community. Somebody Walmart in the chat room said, and I think this is appropriate. If you live in a gated community, you can't complain that they don't let the bad people in. I would just submit that sometimes the bad people are the creative, interesting.
Every filter gets clogged.
Yeah. Every filter gets clogged. I like it. I like it.
Apple has come a long way here, too. We hear about this less and less as things go along. Some of that is people giving up, I suppose. But also, Apple allows stuff in that if you compare it to 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, they've opened up a little bit.
Which they said. I mean, they said it was a bunch of humans running it and they were going to make a lot of mistakes and they didn't anticipate every clause. And they're trying to, I mean, they're good people. They're trying to learn and figure it out, too. Yeah.
And there's still individual mistakes that happen. I can't tell you how many times I hear about somebody whose app gets rejected. And then I talked to them a week or two later and they said, oh, yeah, I appealed it. Their boss looked at it and said that was totally wrong and that they should have accepted it. So the mistakes still happen. People tend not to freak out about them.
Yeah,
so much.
There's an appeal. By the way, if your kids bought something in an app that you didn't like, you can get a $5 credit. Apple, I got the email. You probably did too. If you're an iTunes user, a $100 million settlement to the Apple in-app purchase litigation administrator sent out an email. So look for that in your spam filters. those with charges under $30 will receive a $5 iTunes gift card. Cash refunds will be distributed to those with bills exceeding that amount. If your iTunes account was charged for an in-app purchase made by a minor in a game app without your knowledge or permission. Now, they've changed it, and you really can't claim that anymore. But in the early days, you know, it was completely possible.
Yeah.
And people found very large iTunes bills for beautiful fish.
Now my kids walk over to me every 2 minutes saying, put in the password, put in the password, put in the password.
Yeah. Leo had to authorize every one of those donuts.
Yeah, it's good to be the king. let's see. HBO and a couple other things on my Apple TV. Got the update.
Yeah.
HBO Go's nice.
Yeah, ESPN apps. ESPN. A bunch of other stuff.
Anime. Crackle Fish.
Crunchyroll.
Crunchyroll, something like that. That's anime, right?
Yeah.
I want all your American television. Please give it to me.
Yeah, I guess Apple is not going to ever open up an app store for Apple TV. So this is in the interim. It's nice to see these additions happening. There's still the one that I still miss here is Amazon Instant Video. I wish that was on the Apple TV. Yeah. I understand maybe why it's not there, but it's on my iPad.
It's a direct competitor to the iTunes Store. That's why
it is, and it isn't, because part of Amazon Instant is Netflix, and Netflix is on there. It's essentially for Prime members. It's a streaming service, and Netflix is on the Apple TV. So it wouldn't surprise me if it shows up eventually. But that's the one piece that's missing.
Yeah, it's a channel partnership play, so they have negotiations with all these parties, and I think some of them are just more onerous than others.
Yeah.
Or you can buy a Roku.
Yeah, you can. I have one.
If you have a Roku, you don't get YouTube. I mean, one of the most important channels on my Apple TV is YouTube.
Right.
Or AirPlay.
Yeah, and AirPlay makes a difference.
AirPlay, YouTube, and the iTunes Store. Those are the big differences right there.
I think I'm going to start. I mean, when Mavericks comes out, I'm going to be recommending Apple TVs as a standard accessory. Not
every
just
conference
for the content, but just for, just for whatever you've got on your screen, drag the window into the TV, and now you're watching that on the big TV. Wow.
And it's still amazing that, you know, everyone now makes apps for Apple. Even BlackBerry is making BBM for Apple. Google makes all their apps. Microsoft makes all their apps. There's Netflix. There's YouTube. Apple makes nothing for nobody. There's no iTunes Store app on any other platform at all, ever.
Except Safari is dead for Windows.
So, which is interesting, because if you have, a lot of people now have multiple device families, like maybe you have an Android phone and an iPad, or an Apple TV and a Windows phone, and you can only use your iTunes stuff conveniently on the Apple platform. And I know they run it at, you know, subsistence level just to sell more hardware, but you have to wonder if one day that becomes sort of a cross-platform thing, the way everything else in the market is moving.
I wonder if that's going to bite them in the butt someday too, because I really cannot ever recommend anybody buy anything on iTunes Video on the TV or movie store, because you're going to be locked into the Apple logo for the life of that content. Whereas if you go through Amazon, you're still going to be locked into DRM, but at least you have multi-platform support. The smart thing to do is buy the DVD or the Blu-ray and rip it. But if you have to buy it online, I mean, I just don't see any reason to buy something from Apple if you're going to be, you're just never going to have access to that $20 piece of entertainment unless you're always with an Apple logo on it.
That's why I buy all my books on Kindle. Exact same reason, because it's everywhere.
Me too.
And everywhere is better than only some places.
It's locked, but it's locked, and that's no good. But Amazon is at least willing to say, okay, name a device. We got an app for that. I'm going to make up a device that doesn't exist. That's okay. Give us the API. We will write a version of it for you.
I have a fragmented strategy. I go to Kindle first, but a lot of the titles are either US only or just simply not available, and then I have to go to iBooks and get them. So now I have stuff everywhere. I have to try to remember which app has which thing I want to read.
Oh, isn't it horrible living in a country with universal health care?
Medical care, not health care. We get no free massages, sir.
What? It's a criminal.
I'll give you some addresses in Newton. You'll get some free massages.
So a show of hands. When you turn on your iOS mobile hotspot on your iPhone, do you just accept the password it offers you and tell your friends, use this? Don't. According to a report from computer science researchers at the University of Erlangen in Germany, the report is very Germanically named. Usability versus security is the everlasting trade-off in the context of Apple iOS mobile hotspots.
In German, that's one word.
One word. One word. Apparently, Apple got so it generates these kind of easy-to-remember English language-looking passwords. It uses a word list from an open-source Scrabble game. 52,000 words in it, but it doesn't even use all 52,000 words. Apparently, a subset. Only 1,842 different entries of the dictionary are used, which means they can brute force it in about 60 seconds. So, just a tip. Don't
it's
use
very
that.
Very easy to set your own password.
Yeah. And just, you know, even if it were just like, blah, 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 just set it.
Apple's probably aware of this and probably fixing it.
They'll fix it. I love it that they use an open source Scrabble word list. I just think that's great.
The same one as letterpress. No, not really.
Yeah. Well, the letterpress word list is crap, but that's another matter. I'm sorry.
All right. Now it's serious. All right.
Flirt is so a word. Damn it. I use it all the time. Oh, look at all the flirn on this pan.
Yeah.
I should get those points.
Flirn is a good word. It's a word everyone should use regularly.
Perfectly cromulent word.
10.9 server. Mavericks man in our chat room really wants me to say something like 10.9 server.
I assume there will be one.
Thank you.
I think it's on Apple.com, isn't it?
They talk about it. There's some really cool stuff. I think the code sharing thing from Xcode. And
Yeah.
The OS Mavericks server. Very exciting.
If you have a neck beard, you'll be happy.
You feel how excited we are.
Actually, there are some very interesting features to that, but I wouldn't know because I didn't sign the
Mac NDA. Server Weekly.
Mac Server Weekly. It's a new show. Mm. Do we know anything about the iPhone 5S or next or whatever? Is it going to be a 6? Is it going to be a 5S? Is Apple going to break the mold? They seem to be breaking the mold a lot lately.
It doesn't matter. That's a marketing decision. It's the same thing with software. You can call software. They call it Mavericks. These things are made,
terrible name, by the way. Okay.
Yeah, but just because it is five, like people lost their minds last year when they called it the iPhone 5 because it's the sixth iPhone. But again, it's completely marketing. A bunch of people will sit down and they'll say, oh, we'll call it the new iPhone. And that'll be the name they walk out on the slide. So it's entirely not worth worrying about what they call it. But physically, from what I've heard and from the parts that we've seen,
they look very similar.
It's going to be an iPhone. It's going to be to the iPhone 5 what the iPhone 4S was to the iPhone 4.
But maybe a new A7 chip inside?
Very likely. And that's, again, every generation they seem to do that. It's the same TikTok we've talked about with Intel, where they move to a new architecture with the 5 and the 5S, you'll start getting a lot more benefits on that architecture. And I haven't heard about power, but I've heard about advancements. And seeing what they did with the MacBook Air, it makes me wonder if, again, battery life is becoming more of a concern than power, because I don't think a lot of people would say the 5 is underpowered.
No, it's fast enough. Let's get better battery life. That really is.
Yep.
That really is the issue at this point. And according to your supposition earlier in the show, this might be the hardware that iOS 7 was designed for. Well,
I think it's almost certain that the new iPhone will be dropping when iOS 7 drops, more or less, within a couple of days. And it will be, it'll have some features that older iPhones won't have that are iOS 7 features, but they're really new iPhone features.
Is there anything in the code that we've seen that might hint at fingerprint recognition or anything like that?
I haven't seen any of those stories lately.
No,
but
magic
Apple probably is very diligent in trying to keep that stuff out. They know how people look for that stuff.
Yeah.
But they're actually playing games. They put stuff in there that's deliberately false now just to mess with people who look at the code strings. Like iOS 10.1, they put that kind of stuff
in
there.
Yeah, I think definitely iOS 7 is going to look best on whatever they roll out with iOS 7, and that'll be a new iPhone, and presumably new iPad, and maybe new iPad mini, too.
And when you look further out, they have all these bezel gestures now, and doing bezel gestures on hard edges is not the best feeling in the world. And Apple, especially Johnny Ive, is really interested in feeling. So maybe after the iPhone 5S, when you start getting into 2014 hardware, maybe the new form factors start to better suit the new kinds of direct manipulations that iOS 7 makes so easy.
Yeah. I wonder if we're going to see hard edges still, because it just seems like a odd juxtaposition given the scheme of how things flow on iOS 7.
Isn't it
incredible that Apple's probably the only company where we would think, where we would even entertain the thought that no, they're going to make a softer edged, rounder edged iPhone because aesthetically that would match the operating system that they're creating.
Let me ask you a question. Are you tired of carrying your smartphone while running, cycling, or golfing? Have you ever struggled to pull your phone out of a bag and missed an important call? Wish you could get rid of all those fitness gadgets to just carry one handy tool with you while you exercise. I bet you do. You thought the Pebble Watch was it? No, it's the Cryos. This is an Indiegogo, not a Kickstarter.
I'm Troy McClure. You may know me from such movies as Lead Paint, Delicious but Deadly.
This is the first interactive smartwatch.
WordStar, your key to resume excellence.
That lets you use voice and gestures to control the functions you love. You still wearing your Pebble?
I do. I have my
I saw
Pebble
you
right
showing
here.
Off. Yep. We got a leather band.
Yeah, well, the final band is awful.
It's awful.
You gotta get
it's rubber
band.
Or whatever.
It's a standard band, yeah. You know, a lot of promises. There was a company at Macworld Expo that had a super awesome
Samsung announced a watch last week.
Yeah, but these indie ones, you know, the one at Macworld Expo, we actually did a story on it on Macworld. It was very clear that it was an imaginary product that they were hoping to invent at some point. This one, again, I don't know the details of this, but having used the Pebble, iOS is very limited in what it can do with these remote devices. So I'm really skeptical about whether this is something that
they think you can activate Siri remotely. You can use Siri through a Bluetooth headset.
Yes, we can.
So it could be a Bluetooth headset.
Yeah. It could be. I just I'm a little skeptical. And of course, as soon as all these things come out, somebody, you know, Apple will come out with
Apple
something
will do it. Yeah.
You know, I love the mock-ups, but I feel like we've been burned before by promises here. Even the Pebble has a lot of missing functionality.
I stopped wearing my Pebble.
I like it. It's fine, but there's a lot of stuff missing, especially on iOS, because there's some bugs and there's some OS features that just aren't there.
Yeah.
Your phone. So dream a little dream.
Should I share this?
This is just made up. This guy's got like a white watch on. He's pretending that it's that.
Product is built.
Oh, you can wear it on your neck.
I mean, how stupid would people look wearing a device like that around your neck? I mean, how big of a nerd do you have to be to have like be wearing something like that?
Cut to Andy, would you? Cut to Andy. Why would you wear it around your neck when you could wear it on your head?
That might have been a funnier joke, but it wasn't a very funny joke.
Flavor Flav 2013.
Google Glass, the smartwatch for your face.
You could almost do everything that this says it will do with Glass. Answer phone calls? Not yet. Activate Siri remotely? You can talk. Can you talk? I can't. Can you do yoga on a surfboard?
That's really their
what the
view.
Hell?
How many times have I been doing yoga on a surfboard and wondering I need to answer a test?
I wish I could answer
right
my phone right
without,
now.
Without interrupting my downward dog. Well,
she's quite good at that. You know, it's worth watching the video just for that.
They need the version of this video in black and white of the person who can't do that and falls off the surfboard. Like,
oh, is this the video where the hawk comes down and picks her up and lifts her off?
It's waterproof.
Tell me more.
And so is she.
Now how much would you pay?
Wow.
There's more.
You
can interact with
your smartphone. You know, people do yoga on surfboards. I've seen people do it right here in the Petaluma River. So it's not that odd.
No, they just don't have that watch.
They're not wearing that watch.
Underperforming.
I think this is one of the reasons why I wonder if Apple's going to hang back for a while on a watch, because there are opportunities for other companies to make these things and get laughed at a lot. But there'll be a lot of people who are going to say specifically, here's what I would have liked this to do, and that'll give them more focus. Sony today announced the second version of the smartwatch they released last year. And it's an Android device, which means it can have a lot of connectivity and a lot of interactivity with an Android phone. And that's certainly not the best way to do anything, but at least these things in the field will give a hands-on idea of what kind of person would actually want to buy such a thing.
I think this is going to be a real product category. I have skepticism for individual devices, but and also skepticism about how good a job Android and iOS interact with these devices right now. I think it's early days, and there are going to be some interesting false starts, and there are going to be some things that are flops. And I do think we'll get there, but it is so early that these are for, you know, crazy tech people only right now.
It's weird because they haven't even solved, or they don't even really have any ideas on the basic question of what features and functions should be on the phone and what features do people actually want to have access on their watch. And it's not even necessarily, okay, music player, that might be nice. Okay, watch, look at text, that might be nice. But once you get past, what do you do for item number 4, item number 5, item number 6? How will people relate to this? And that's the most... That's a basic question you have to solve about any new piece of technology before you actually start into full production on it, and no one really has any idea.
It reminds me so much of those Casio calculator watches.
Oh, yeah.
It came with a little tiny stylus.
My Pebble totally reminds me of that calculator watch.
Those were always awesome.
You were such...
I had a calculator watch in high school. Maybe I have said too much.
I think it's the same exact people.
Well, could be.
Who didn't, Jason? Who didn't?
Could be. I honestly am one of those people who's like, well, I could take my phone out of my pocket to see who texted me, or I could look at my watch. And that's easier because I'm lazy.
Tokyo court ruled on Friday that Samsung has infringed Apple's bounce back patent. Gosh, these fights are everywhere. They're all over the world. All over the world.
Worse than zombie movies.
Yeah.
Now, that would be a movie. Patton's
worse even than World War Z.
Did you see World War Z? People said good things about World War Z. I'm not supposed to talk about movies or TV anymore.
No, we get in trouble.
People yell at me. When did this hell start, this spoiler thing? What a bunch of weenies. When did this start?
Can we run it down? So Rosebud was his childhood sled.
The girl in the crying game's actually a guy. What is the statute of limitations on spoilers? Is it a month, 6 months, a year?
All the people in Lost were in limbo.
Really? I haven't seen Lost yet.
Only at the very end, though, not for the rest of it. What else? Do we have any other good spoilers we can get out there?
Soylent Green is people.
Yes.
People.
Yep.
The end of the prisoner was not worth the wait.
Not worth it.
That's right.
We don't know what happened.
Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father and Princess Leia's father because they were twins. I know. It's impossible, you're saying to yourself, but it's true.
But I don't remember this spoiler thing earlier in life. I mean, this is something new.
It's new. I mean,
is it because we all watch TV later now?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Nobody watches it when
it's on. You watch the show when it's on, and then you go to work the next day, and around the water cooler,
you talk about it.
I can't believe that somebody shot JR, right? And now, you know, people on the East Coast are tweeting about Game of Thrones while I'm, like, cooking my dinner. And
I could have used a warning for to be honest with you.
I read the book, so I wasn't spoiled, but I was like, I told my wife, do not be on Twitter now. Just get off of Twitter now.
Don't watch Twitter because you don't want to know.
Yeah, and Twitter is great for those shared experiences, but when people are out of sync, it's bad.
Yeah.
Well, plus, even like news sites, like for people who are fans of like these movies and these comic books, when you say, I'm just not going to read anything about the new Star Trek movie, and then the headlines say, well, people are the controversial ending of Star Trek and the blah, 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 blah. What do you think? It's like, I think that I now have no reason to see the movie because the headline in my RSS feeder just told me what the ending of this movie was. Thank you.
But is that why you go see a movie, is to see the twist?
No, I don't. I made a decision a long time ago that I want to see how well it's done.
I already know the ending. I'll watch movies several times. I just want to see how well it's done.
But also, if stories were meant to be told as a sequence of events. The person who created this movie did not intend for you to walk in knowing that this is what you're going to. Everything you're seeing right now builds up to this scene that happens 10 minutes before the ending of it. So it's not like I would not see a movie that I was interested in seeing because I know what happens at the end. But it's like, congratulations, you've just basically put my favorite sweater in the wash and shrunk it 1.5 sizes. I can still wear it, but it's no longer going to be as pleasant a thing as it could have been if you did not do that.
Obviously, Andy's coming down on the side of the no spoilers.
I think the best thing to do, I do think
there's a statute of limitations. I think the window for spoilers opens 1 month after a movie's release.
It closes
again when the thing comes out on video, and then opens again like a month and a half after that.
The chat room, by the way, don't go in our chat room. It's just been filled with spoilers.
Yes. Andy's got sort of a double hung window spoiler.
Right, double hung
system.
Andy. Yep.
That's the, so you know, you got the top window and the bottom window, and it's architecture humor. Leo, come on.
Yeah. I get it. Are those counterweighted?
They are counterweighted. Okay.
And switch the spoiler screens for,
you know, the best thing is to be blissfully ignorant, and then when it's like years later and everybody thinks that they've spoiled it, then watch it. I had a friend who never watched Lost, and she watched it 6 months ago, and you know, it's great because the spoilers have like faded away,
right,
and she can just watch it. And
I'm saving
cares.
All this stuff for the old age home because Alzheimer's, I won't remember.
Me either. I don't remember
you
now.
You just have to watch the same few episodes over and over.
Every day, Groundhog.
Oh my
episode.
God, Zod broke RSS.
Oh yes, it's coming in through the feeds.
No. That was an after effect of the Superboy punch.
Enough of your Superboy punches, Inako.
It brought that out that character into the Marvel universe. Also.
The chat room is the best thing in the world right now. Every single spoiler ever.
Usul is the Kwisatz Haderach.
And who shot JR? Khan.
Khan. Yeah. Now my phone's ringing.
Mac break is a killing word.
That's JR.
Jason, would you like
to
update
your... If it's a Nokia phone, don't answer it. It's Zod.
Yeah, Zod only uses Nokia Lumias. Yeah.
Jason, I don't know if I'm proud of you or displeased with you that you did a one-word answer of con and just simply said it as though it was one syllable.
Con. You know, I'm not really mad at con right now to do the full-on Shatner.
That's right.
You know, no. It's just a fact. I'm just talking about con.
Well, even then, he was pretending. Don't you feel gypped that was ungenuine anger at con? Goodness gracious.
Andy, it's called acting.
Andy, cut to Bobby Ewing crouched over JR's bloody body. He looks to the sky and shouts, as only Patrick Duffy could, "Con!"
All right,
don't
that's
say
a mashup
bad about the man from Atlantis, Jason.
That's a mashup I want to see.
Thanks, chat room.
Wow,
we love you, chat room.
They're going crazy right now in the chat room.
Best rat hole ever.
Best rat hole ever. We're going to take a break. When we come back, picks of the week. Jason Snell is here from Macworld Magazine, editor in chief. You're still the editor in chief.
Sure.
Sure, why not?
Why not?
From iMore.com and a lot of other points north, Mr. Rene Ritchie, Andy Inocco from the Chicago Sun-Times, and his cows and squirrel. He's got a menagerie.
Moose on squirrel.
I'm like St. Francis. I'm the friend to all living creatures.
As long as they're stuffed.
As long as they don't spoil the ending of the movie.
Yeah, man.
I saw Superman like 4 days after it opened. It was like it was such an effort to make sure I did not know what happened in the movie. Dag nabbit.
My phone is
but all about all of the living things.
Yeah, isn't there just like a little switch that you can? Oh, well, no.
Yeah, there is. I should have just switched it. I used to have a thing. Oh, I feel bad. I took the Wi-Fi router out of the house, and my daughter can't do her homework. I knew this would happen.
Homework? Is she in summer school?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just do what we all did. Just go to the basement, get the Britannica out.
Yeah, really.
If it's not in the Britannica, it's probably not worth citing.
I'm going to text her, sorry, I took the router. Sorry, I took the router, comma. You better go to mom's. Sorry again. Bye.
You're a good egg, Leo.
Use borrow a cup of Wi-Fi. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you don't have internet access, this is not going to benefit you. But here's the good news. Squarespace never runs out of internet access. You cannot. We could point the vast and malicious Twit Army at any site and bring it down. I could do it right now. I have that power. Unless it's running on Squarespace. For some reason, we send thousands of people bombarding a site and they cannot bring it down. It's because Squarespace has the best hosting in the market. And on top of it, the best content management system. The software that you use is fabulous. If you want to create your own space, whether it's a website, a portfolio, an e-commerce site, a mobile site, Squarespace is the place to go. Great support, great training. They have fabulous forums, videos. They even do workshop seminars free for Squarespace customers. You can get started right now. You don't have to take my word for it. Just click the Get Started button at squarespace.com. Pick your template. So many nice ones. New ones all the time. Try that new Momentum Full Bleed template. It's gorgeous. 2 weeks, no credit card needed. Just play with it. Import your existing content. They've got importers for all the major blogs. You could just fill it up. Put your comments in there from your old blog. All the images, all the links still work. Knock on it. Bang on it. Send all your friends there. Send the Twit Army there. Then after 2 weeks, if you say, hey, I think this is going to work for me, boy, they have great prices, really good prices. A Squarespace site can be as little as $8 a month. $8 a month when you'd buy a year contract. $10 if you just want to go month to month. But the most popular is the unlimited plan. This is such a good deal. When you buy an annual plan, $16 a month. If you want to go month to month, $20. You get unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs. Unlimited bandwidth. So you never get a bandwidth bill. You could everybody in the world could go to your Squarespace site and it wouldn't cost you a penny. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors too. So if you wanted to do a news site, a magazine site, man, this is just empowering the world to create their own stuff. Your sites are always mobile ready because all the Squarespace templates are responsive. That is, they look great on any size screen, no matter how your customers come. If you buy the annual or biannual plan, they will set you up with your domain name. .com.org.net.mobi.biz.info. And we'll hook it up. Of course, they've got great customer support on all their plans. And if you want to sell stuff online, $24 a month. They don't take a cut. You can sell unlimited physical or digital products, MP3s or CDs, books or ebooks. You'll, of course, be mobile, as with everything at Squarespace, or, 27-inch screen. Always looks great. They throw in things like inventory tracking, tax calculations, shipping calculations. You could do coupons, unlimited coupons. Squarespace is fabulous. If you want to do e-commerce, a website, a portfolio, just a blog, just anything, try it out. They look great. They work great. And it's a very, very affordable way to do it. In fact, if you use our offer code MacBreak6, you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Another reason to buy a longer plan. Get save more. MacBreak6, Squarespace.com. Go there today. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with Renee Ritchie this week. Hi, Renee.
Hi. I'm gonna zig instead of zag, Leo. A couple weeks ago, Alex Lindsay was talking about Final Cut Pro 10 and how they use it. And I had been using iMovie. I moved to Final Cut Pro 10 a while ago. And it turns out through a bunch of bad circumstances that I ended up being the one who had to edit a lot of the videos, the smaller ones, not the big ones, for our Talk Mobile event. And I'm not a video editor, but I used Final Cut Pro 10, and it was incredibly easy. Even I managed to do a multi-camera shoot. I was shown in about 5 minutes how to set up multi-angle over three different cameras, and within about 30 minutes, I had a 20-minute clip, which was good enough to make people think that someone who ought to be doing it was actually doing it. And I would never have been able to do that on the original Final Cut Pro. I could do that laboriously on iMovie by carefully trying to cut two cameras together, maybe. But Final Cut Pro really allowed me to achieve pretty damn good results without knowing almost anything about how the process is meant to work. I just dragged. I can do audio because of podcasts, so I did a lot of the audio and other sources. I brought it in. I layered in lower thirds. I had a mountain of little graphical lines in the end, but it rendered out into an actual video that I could put on the internet.
Amazing.
And fool everybody with. And I was really, really happy.
So did you read the manual or anything?
No.
Wow.
I dove in, and it's one of those examples, I think, where Apple really did, you know, anger a lot of professionals, but it allowed me to achieve results that I would never have been able to do using the previous version of the product. So I was really happy.
You know, I'm so scared of it. I just use iMovie.
It was easy. It was like using iMovie.
It's, I should
really
it is. Do it.
It is. I mean, that's the knock on it from the pro side, but for a consumer or a you know, prosumer
really
kind
iMovie
of person,
Pro.
It is in many ways, and I've done some stuff with it, and it's really easy to use. It's amazing.
You convinced me
from that
perspective. It was so easy that Jason is now convincing me to move over to Logic from GarageBand. That's my next step.
Join us over in Logic.
I love Logic. I love
Logic.
Saved
me a huge amount
Logic
of time.
Is awesome. I make all my beats in Logic. Hey, don't knock it. Wiz Khalifa follows me on Twitter.
Nice.
I asked him if he wanted any beats.
He said no.
He said no.
Oh, the one thing I'll add is that they're about to... Apple did announce that they're making a new version that'll take advantage of all the new stuff they're putting in things like the new Mac Pro, which eventually will trickle down to the other machines, I assume.
Do I have to buy a new Mac Pro?
No.
If you need a reason, Leo, that's a good one.
Everybody asks
we'll
me...
We'll get you a trash can and tell you
it's
a Mac Pro.
Yeah, I know. Ooh, it's pretty. Everybody says, when is Alex Lindsay going to come on and say what he thinks of the new Mac Pro? And we haven't, he's been out traveling. We'll get him back and as soon as we can.
If
I can't imagine.
I'm sure he has opinions.
Yeah.
If you go to kickingbear.com, Guy English did an amazing article
about
what the GPU means to him as a graphics programmer and the ability, the kind of applications we might be able to get from a machine that's so graphically powerful. And it was.
He says, I can't stop thinking about the new Mac Pro.
Yeah. It's a perspective. We've had so much talk about iOS 7, and he really, Renee was saying that it made him, you know, get excited about the new Mac Pro in a way that he hadn't been before. And Guy, as a developer... he makes some really interesting points about why he's enthusiastic about this, about what's new in the Mac Pro.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But there's some interesting stuff in there that hasn't really been used before.
And I agree that he wouldn't be fantasizing about the Mac Pro if Apple had just taken the old cheese grater and upgraded it. But that's what they should have done. That's what everybody else except Kicking Bear wanted. Kicking Bear is excited because he's lusting for it.
Yeah, I don't know if people wanted another cheese grater. And, you know, Apple, when does Apple give people what they want? Apple gives people what they think they need.
Right.
It's Apple.
What do you think we need, Mr. Jason Snell? What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week, it's a little bit, you can use it now, but it'll be really great when Mavericks comes out, which is an app called AirServer, which is $15 from airserver.com. It turns your Mac into a receiver for AirPlay.
So I never understood what this is for. So I don't get it.
So you can AirPlay to a Mac from somewhere else. You could AirPlay to a Mac from your iPad, in which case your iPad video would appear on the screen.
But can't I do everything on the Mac anyway?
You can. Okay, so here's my scenario that I think this is most interesting. Is you get an iMac, and it's a couple of years old, and you want to get a new iMac, or you want to get a laptop. And you've got that beautiful screen. You can turn the iMac not into a TV. With Mavericks, you can turn it into an external display. Just using the built-in software,
using Air Server
on your old iMac and the new AirPlay features on Mavericks.
Would it be pretty fast?
There's a little bit of lag, but not too much.
But it'd be good for like Twitter or email.
You could
email.
Put a lot of extra stuff over there, and you've just turned that old Mac into an external monitor.
You couldn't do that before, just hardware it?
There's very certain iMacs where you could do HDMI in, but with this, it's all in software. There were some hacks that you could use before that would do it, but now it's just going to be built into the OS.
Well, that's good news.
And you run Air Server. I think it's a really clever idea, and if you've ever wanted to do something like capture a screen of an iPad, maybe to capture video on your Mac, it'll work for that too because it'll do AirPlay mirroring. So it's as if your Mac becomes an Apple TV TV set.
And they point out that for education, this would be good. If you were a teacher, you had an iPad, you wanted to show this.
You can project
kids.
It onto any Mac.
Right.
But I think with Mavericks, this becomes much more interesting. A lot of people get an iMac and it maybe slows down and they can't use it very much, but it's still got a great screen. The screen still works fine. $15 and that's worth 5 licenses. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And they have student licenses, et cetera.
Yeah, it's a cool idea, and it works. I tried it out today. Works great.
I just got my Love Handles. Actually, I ordered 2 things from I Love Handles, and they're back ordered on the one that I really wanted. But when I got to the website, I said, well, maybe I'll get that too. So ilovehandles.com, and the thing that I wanted is they make this stiff cord, the stiff lightning cord, so that you could just have your iPhone stick up out of your Mac because it's like a little Gumby. And I just like that idea. Or I could plug it into the wall and have it stick up off the wall. But then while I was there, I thought, well, this is kind of a neat company. They do interesting things. They're backordered. I guess my white trunk will start showing. It will ship in a couple of weeks. No, actually, the 25th, a couple of days. So I'll show you that when that comes. But I did get my plank. So I'll show you the plank. Now, this is a clever idea, I think. By the way, $30. It's a nice piece of wood. Okay? And it has a mounting thing, so you can screw it into the wall, you know, and then you put that on the wall. You put the wood on there, right? And you might say, well, what's that for? Well, then you put your iPhone on top of it. And it has a little magnetic thing that you can hang your keys from on the bottom. So you put that right when you come in the door. Wouldn't you like? Very Swedish.
That's how much for that piece of wood?
But it's more than just a piece of wood.
It's got a magnet heart taped to the bottom.
And a magnet on the bottom. And it's got this little thing. $30.
Wow. What do you think the margins are on that?
Hey, come on. Apple sold how much did it sell its bumper for?
Yeah, well,
okay,
exactly.
5 cents of plastic?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, all right. I'm still... Look, see? She's happy. Oh. She put it on the wall.
Heart.
Big heart.
There's that heart.
You know, it's kind of a... It's kind
see?
Of a,
doesn't she it, look happy that she's got that on the wall?
Less it's than important three. To consider how many times the thought, hey, I could have made that, needs to be followed by, yeah, but you're not going
but
to.
But I would.
I could have made this in shop class. Sure.
If I was looking for a block of wood, a wall-mountable block of wood for my iPhone, I would probably buy that instead of making it myself.
You could have
hanged
your invented keys Facebook, from the bottom.
You would have invented Facebook.
Oh, ye of little faith. You'll be so jealous when you come to my house and I just have my phone on a little plank.
Exactly. And you're gonna say, oh, that's a really great idea. And I saw something quite similar at CES 2 years ago that...
in the Shenzhen booth.
You could just find a piece of wood and nail it to the wall. This is much more elegant than that.
And then
much more. And then stick a magnet on the bottom.
I wasn't sure.
2x4 with a bent nail sticking out of the wall, Jason.
They didn't just walk outside
spackle
and
that over.
They
spackle it over.
They didn't mention how they were going to put it on the wall, and I just bought it in faith that they would somehow have a magic way of mounting that on the wall. And indeed,
they do.
This is quite clever.
This is not unlike something you would see in a display at the Apple Store. And we all like the Apple Store, do we not? There you go.
Exactly.
Just round rings around you logically.
Exactly. And did I mention it has a magnet on the bottom for your keys?
A magnet on the bottom for your keys.
Oh, well, I'm sold, Jason.
It comes with its own screws.
Screws. You can hang a smart
I bet
from it.
If you had
now
like
how much would you pay?
If you had a can of Contadina tomato paste that you wanted to keep handy, it would also keep that there.
Just throw keys at it, it'll Magneto right to the bottom.
That's why I don't do picks on this show anymore. You guys are a bunch of
It's a very nice piece of wood.
I'm totally with you, Leo. I think that's neat. I don't, I, you know.
We appreciate it's a magnetic shelf for your phone.
Look. It just seems like a weird collect. I mean, and then there's also a magnet for your keys. It's just,
Don't worry, Leo. He's an editor. It's his job to shoot down people's likes and joys and dreams.
I'm just glad I didn't bring this to the story
now,
meeting.
Leo, did you sit at home thinking, I wish I had a place to put my phone and also hang my keys? Or did you see this and go, hey, I have keys. I have a phone.
I told you how this happened. I wanted the Gumby USB cable. It was out of stock. So I ordered the plank instead.
I like the heart.
I just keep thinking about this. Some PR person who emailed the president of the company saying, hey, definitely you should listen to Mac Break 5 because Leo's going to choose your thing as the pick of the week.
That's why I never
no such
warned
thing
them.
Is bad attention.
It all begins today, I assure you.
They also make
that
little
rocket moon to the top.
I'm going to get like a dead fish in the mail from them with a little heart on it.
They also, heart fish. Yeah. They also make a little $15 pouch you could put your phone in.
I used to be the PR person for that company. I'm now the head of PR at Apple. We think we can get you a black PowerBook Model 5300 for loan sometime in the next 3 years. As opposed to the
does
next
it come
black.
With a plank of wood? Yeah. Put it on.
We don't want to offend your artistic sensibilities, Jason, by sending you something you won't enjoy.
Andy, what's your pick of the week?
Well, unfortunately, you slightly scooped me because
by the way, we brought ilovehandles.com down.
Oh.
So now, adding insult to injury.
Jason, brought that site down. We just simply gave it too much traffic.
Squarespace.
They'll be back.
Go ahead.
This is a very simple product that I kind of like. It's from Kero Products, K-E-R-O. And it's nothing but a stubby little lightning cable. But this is the sort of it's nothing more than what you think it is. It is a simply lightning cable this big. Unfortunately, the price of this is not commensurate with the length of the label relative to relative to the length of a full size one. It is $25. But the good news is that I like little cables like this because you're not liable to steal this out of your laptop bag or to put it on your desk because you need something to pinch. This is the sort of thing where you basically keep it in your laptop bag or keep it in your purse or whatever your go bag is, and it will stay there. And when you're out of the house and you desperately need to charge up a lightning device, it will be there for you. So on that basis, it's not expensive until the first time that you realize that you didn't think that your battery was at 6% and you really desperately need your phone to work for more than the next three minutes.
Look how floppy that was. Mine stands up.
Well, can you put keys and a bar and a beer opener on yours?
Ooh, look at that.
Oh, wait, you can't.
What do you got, a church key? What, you could drink a lot of beer in the road?
Wow, keys.
Well, mine came with a free opener, which is
nice.
Good for not only bottles, but also cans.
Are hanging keys on technology a thing? Is that a thing now? Did I miss that thing?
You didn't get the memo, Jason?
Wow.
I have a 64 gigabyte flash drive on mine.
I got keys. Got nowhere to put them.
I like that tick.
I have a tool that is necessary for the installation of an Apple Disk II drive on my keys.
Maybe
because
time
you never know.
Maybe
you
time really to take that one know. Off.
Again, you know, someday we'll be in the bunker in Lost, and they'll need to fix that disk drive.
Yeah.
And they'll say, well, we're screwed because surely nobody has that special tool. And I'll say, I have that special tool.
Andy Anako, Chicago Sun-Times, a must-read. Every single day, and we love talking to you every week on Mac Break Weekly. He also does Anako's Almanac at 5x5.tv. What day do you do that?
Usually every Thursday. We've had some bad luck in that both me and Dan have been like busy on Thursday. So I pre-recorded a couple that will start going on base. Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah. That's where he talks about comic books and, you know, pop culture.
Comics
stuff like
and
that.
Movies and movies. Religion and lumber. Yeah. What kind of lubin do you want? How do you stain pine? Have you got to pre-seal it, or do you just use something that's oil-based to begin with?
I mentioned this is hardwood, and it's made in Montana.
No, that's genuine really good. That's not particle wood. Board. That's
this
real wood.
Is real wood.
I suppose if it were made in China, you know, Jason would be all over it because he doesn't like people who work in Montana and build things with their hands the way this country was made.
You found me out, Andy.
See? I'm just sorry that you had to be outed in this way.
Sad. Jason,
you've been Paula Deaned.
Jason, Jason Howell is Jason Howell, Howell is over there. Lovely. Jason Howell is over there. So I'm just waving at him. Jason Snell, I'm on right the other here. Hand, is sitting right next to me. I probably should talk to him instead. He is, of course, editorial director at IDG, where he heads. He's the head honcho at Macworld Magazine and Macworld.com.
Yeah.
And look for his Mavericks Part 1 soon.
Yes, soon on Macworld.com.
Good, good, good. I want to read that. iMore.com is the place to find Mr. Rene Ritchie. Well, sure. That in Montreal.
Yes, sir. Rainy Montreal right
Rainy
now.
Rainy Montreal. You say Montreal.
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 Oui, Montreal.
Ouais.
Excellent.
Très bien.
Oui.
Il fait pleu.
When you come, we'll have poutine and smoked meat, and we will be happy.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
You guys are great. Oh. I don't know what accent that is. Hey, thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly. Look, the instructions are inside. Did I mention that?
You can't get them out. Made out of paper, real paper.
That's interesting. And you can use that cardboard box for other things, I'm betting, Leo.
It's a
display box.
Yeah.
So if you like, so you can see the wood. A really pretty butterfly. Cheap. You could put that as a display box.
You know what that is? That's the aspirational part of this packaging. That it's hoping they get in the Apple Store, right?
Aspirational.
Aspirational, right exactly. There. Someday, this box will be on display.
You can't afford it, but it makes you look at other products in that line and associate that product with class. It is the Retina MacBook.
It's a Halo product.
Wooden shelf.
That is Retina wood. I mean, the pixels on that wood are amazing.
Well, skeuomorphic.
It's like one of those concept cars. You don't really buy that.
If Louis Mantia had made a piece of wood, it would look like that.
We've broken Leo.
Every Tuesday, they break me. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. If you can watch live, we'd love it if you do. If not, on-demand audio and video available after the fact anytime at twit.tv/MBW or, of course, wherever finer podcasts are aggregated, displayed, stored, and delivered directly to you. If you'd like to be here in studio, we're filmed before a studio audience.
Yeah, it's an excellent audience.
In this case, a nice large audience. It's great to have you all. You can just email tickets at twit.tv and we will make sure that we have a chair put out for you. It's not required, but that way we have a chair.
Over there.
Over our shoulders.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Handsome, beautiful audience.
They're a handsome audience. Good-looking audience.
Well-mannered.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Now you better get back to work because break time is over.